Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, we are joined today by Craig Hill, who's the manager of loan division, and Greg Norris, who runs the property buying division. Welcome, both of you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Craig, a lot of times we get a call from an investor doing their first deal, and in the conversation you find out that it's got structural damage or it's got mold. Is that necessary to start with that type of a property?
No. I tell people that are newer, and this is unless the one exception to that would be somebody that's just starting out as a property buyer that might have a construction background.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the exception. But I do find that so many new people will find a property that just needs so much work, and there's so many like unknowns that I almost will talk them out of it like 100% of the time. The saying that I use with them is, I say, you did not find that property. I say, it found you. Because there's thousands of investors looking for houses constantly. And a lot of times the calls I get, I can tell, really, once again, it just kind of latched onto this person, and they just think that that's the only house they can possibly get at a discount. And I try to explain to them, you know, come in the office and I'll show you five others that look brand new that they got the same discount on.
Right.
So, you know, I just try to get them out of that mindset that the house has to be like just a complete disaster before they find something.
Yeah, there's sort of an urgency sometimes when they're beginning their buying career just to be able to say they've got one.
Exactly.
And then when they get one, it can be the end of their career if it's the wrong one.
Exactly. Not to use another saying, but I do use this on the phone a lot. I kind of tell them, especially when we are near Thanksgiving, I say, you got to remember, it's Thanksgiving Day. You don't want to have a pancake breakfast at 11:30. Because if you do, you've kind of shot the whole day.
Yeah.
And I try to explain to them that really their career in this, it's just a great opportunity, and you don't have to make $1 million in 6 months. Because if you do that, you'll probably lose money and talk yourself out of ever doing it again. I mean, you just have to kind of gradually build up. And we heard Greg on the last segment. I mean, you know, it takes time sometimes. I mean, to get rolling and buying the right inventory. So I try to point him in that direction.
Greg, a year ago, we were buying and repairing some properties. What are you doing different to the properties we buy today as opposed to a year ago?
I don't think I've really changed that much. I think I'm probably gotten more proficient at what I'm doing, but the repair is about the same. I think when I first started, we were trying to get away with a cheaper repair.
Well, that's what I'm kind of getting at.
Yeah, that was, I think, at the very beginning, but that changed very quickly.
Okay, what were the changes that we made?
Just putting in granite countertops was probably the main thing that really changed.
We started with tile and decided it was not a big cost difference to go to granite.
Right.
Okay.
And, we were trying linoleum and eventually figured out that the $500 we were saving just wasn't worth it there either. So making improvements that we felt like would produce a product that somebody had to have and were willing to pay the top dollar for.
Appliances? I mean, what kind of appliances are we putting in?
Stainless steel appliances right now is standard.
Okay. And that was an upgrade from a few months ago, it seems. Seems like we're making, every time I show the properties in boot camps, I can look at the progression and see, okay, now we're doing this. Glass closet, sliding doors. I mean, that wasn't always done. Is it standard now?
No, it's not standard.
Oh, I got lucky?
That just happened to be a general contractor that decided to do his own thing, which, you know, a lot of times they have really good ideas. So a lot of times they don't add a lot of expense. But
what is the response? Have you talked to people that are showing our houses? Are they, you know, what is their reaction to the inventory that we're presenting?
Sure. I've had realtors that deal with buyer's agents who deal with buyers all the time. And I have one realtor right now that she's basically just told me that, you know, she doesn't hardly even waste any time anymore trying to go see the bank REOs. She just feels like it's a complete waste of her time. And she tells her clients that. She goes, if you want to go see a property, let's go see what the Norris Group has. So, yeah, we're starting to get some name recognition. People are starting to recognize our signs. So we're definitely starting to get known for our quality product.
What are some of the keys to selling the homes in this market?
Price. Price, price.
I knew
and
we were
going to
come up with that one. Now, that doesn't mean we're cheap. I mean, we're not the cheapest in the by
any stretch. By matter of fact, it's interesting. In the last 2 months, I've really noticed that a lot of the higher end listings have all gone away. Now I am the highest listing in the MLS. There's very little inventory. There's probably only about 2 to 3 months worth of inventory in the product line that I'm in, and I'm the highest price almost across the board. And 3 months ago, there were probably at least 20% more listings above me.
Now, does that prevent you from getting offers?
No.
Okay. So somehow a reasonable customer looking out for their best interest is still deciding that we're a reasonable choice.
Yes. I think when they look at how much repairs need to be done to the typical REOs and how much damage, I think they look at the price difference and see, yeah, we're probably in cases $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 above what they could buy a beat-up REO for, but they get tired of, first of all, fighting for those lowest REOs. The lowest price REOs do get a lot of action.
Mm-hmm.
There are people willing to buy those, and after 3 or 4 failed attempts to buy the piece of junk, ours start looking pretty good.
Now, okay, the first thing you mentioned on why we're selling a property is price, and yet we're the highest price. So,
well, it's a combination of price and condition. I mean, you have to be within reason of the market. Not only that, the other problem that we're experiencing, as you know, is appraisals. When you have too much of the market selling at just the junk price,
yeah,
we're having to try to set the top level ourselves because there's not a lot of anybody else out there doing what we're doing.
What seems to be the monthly payment that the buyers
want to see?
Yeah, I want to see.
The upper level of payment, at least in Moreno Valley, is between $1,200 to $1,400 a month is what they want their payment in.
And how close would that be to renting a similar house?
I'd say it's equivalent.
Okay.
Yeah, if not less.
Okay.
In instances.
We stage the properties. Has that proved to be a good idea?
I think it really has. I think it makes a big difference in how the house is perceived when people walk in. I mean, we do a nice remodel, better than most, I think, but I think it really sets us apart in the fact that somebody walks in and it feels like a custom home.
I think when they look online, too, it's sort of irresistible and they have to go see it, too.
Right.
I think that's a big help. Craig, we've got dozens of clients who buy and sell property. What is usually the holdup when selling the property from what you've seen?
It seems like the financing is a lot of the holdup for just various reasons. It just seems like the appraisals are a little bit of a problem. The majority of my clients that I have can almost mirror what Greg's been saying. They do a very nice rehab. A lot of them do stage their houses. It seems like there's a lot of willing buyers for the nicer houses at the prices that seem fair. It just doesn't seem like the system on the loan side, the conventional loan side, is keeping up with really the demand for the nice houses.
Have you noticed the people repairing properties nicer than they did the last stage?
Oh, absolutely. It's across the board. In the 90s, I mean, I think people thought that a coat of paint and a new carpet was a rehab.
Yep.
And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. I know, you know, this time almost everybody across the board is spending $20,000 to $25,000 just because, once again, they want to make the house as nice as they possibly can. They want the people to really just make the decision to spend, like Greg said, $30,000 to $50,000 more on a house that's fixed up.
I know you spend some of your time talking to people that are still trying to get a number that's yesterday's number, where they just priced it too high, and you have to constantly tell them, get it right, get it right.
Yes, for years I've been listening to you tell people one of the major faults in this market is for investors to what you call chase the market down. And I do. If I see a client that's had a property that we in-house with us for more than maybe, you know, 4 or 5 months, I'll call them and I'll say, okay, you know, what are you priced at? And what do we need to do to make sure you get an offer? And it's almost always the same response, interestingly enough. The investor will say, well, I bought it for this and I fixed it for this. It's almost like they feel like they have to sell it for this much.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, when somebody goes in to buy a house, they're not asking you how much you have in it or what do you need to break even. They're going to pay what the house is worth.
That's right.
And some people just really have a hard time with that concept. And then 6 months later, the numbers have dropped again, if not 3 months in this volatile market.
Right. Greg, let's talk about the appraisal issue that you brought up. Has that become more and more of an issue in the last, say, 90 days than it was before?
Last 30 days.
Last 30 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only in the last 30 days has it really become an issue.
What do you think's changed? Because we sort of have more comps than we used to.
Because banks are becoming so scared, I think, and a little, they're overcompensating. Basically, anything that's over a month old as an appraisal is almost too old.
Wow.
2 months is a very old appraisal right now. 3 months is ancient history.
So for our quality of inventory, it's very likely we don't have a comp.
That's
the new rule.
That's the problem.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we had comps.
Sure.
But they were our own inventory, unfortunately.
Well.
But if they're 3 months old, they're too old to use.
And even 60 days. Because that's getting a little tight.
Yes.
Any difference between an FHA transaction and the appraisals? Because we know about the 90-day rule, but there's a 180-day rule that if we sell it prior to 180 days, we have to have two appraisals. So is the problem in the review appraiser or any appraisal at this point?
You know, funny enough, that issue has been brought up almost never.
Almost never that they needed two appraisals?
That they needed two appraisals. I'm getting away with one appraisal.
I'll be.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know that the rule exists.
But yeah, that's on their side, on the lending side.
Yeah.
Maybe they consider the review appraisal the second appraisal, because I know that they're doing that almost all the time.
That could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the frustrating parts about a review appraiser is they could be seated 500 miles away and never go see why that customer made that buying decision. And that's
true.
That's pretty frustrating. Craig, there have been many times you were expecting a loan would pay off only to have it drag on and on. What seems to be holding up those types of sales? Is that, once again, with the lender issues again?
Yeah, it's almost exclusively seems to be lender issues because, once again, there seems to be a lot of willingness on the part of the buyers to close the deals. For me personally, it does seem like the last 30 days surprisingly has yielded a few more payoffs.
Okay.
We went through, and you remember
this. Of course, we were expecting those 90 days.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But at least they finally started to happen, because it seemed like once the financial crisis hit back in October, I mean, it was just like so many deals just hung on forever. But the last 90 days has actually been better for me for payoffs. So they seem to be moving a little bit better.
The thing that's holding up the closing for them, is it, has the appraisal come up an awful lot, or has it just been all of the checks and rechecks of the qualifications of the buyer?
It seems to be checks and rechecks.
Okay.
It almost seems like they think they're ready, and then they have to do one more thing, one last item that the review appraiser wants to see, or mortgage insurance. It just seems to be, for me anyway, that there's a lot of different levels. And most of this I'm hearing, you know, from the client side, so I'm not into it in depth.
Right.
But it just does seem like there's just hurdle after hurdle that they seem to have to jump over before it finally closes.
Craig, on the money side, we've added a lot of new trust deed investors, you know, in the last 6 months.
Yes.
What is the typical concern that they have in doing their first trust deed investment, and how do you get them over the hump to say, okay?
Well, I think safety with everybody is you know, obviously maybe their number one concern. And how I address that is most everybody, you know, we've all lived through the last 2 years of investments with a lot of negativity, whether it be stock market or anything else. So I kind of address it in a few different ways. One, we talk about like the type of client that we lend to as a company. Once again, they're going to have money in the deal. Their intent is going to be to take it to the finish line. The second thing I usually talk to them about is we're making, I mentioned this, I think, on the other segment, we're making a loan of maybe $100,000 now, and that would have been $200,000 just 2 years ago. And then the third thing is I tell them, you know, getting a 1,500 square foot house built in 2004 in the city of Paris. Worst case, if you have, you know, because we always have to address the worst case. Worst case, if you had to make a decision to buy that house and hold on to it, it probably wouldn't be a bad decision in these uncertain times, because I often kid with them, if you want to, I mean, you can go and stand on that yard and you know that you have something tangible.
And it's a first trustee that we're loaning on, so they own it free and clear.
Exactly. If something happens negative, they can always rent that house out. So there's not a real horrible solution. You know, worst case is not that bad right now in these times.
For a new trusted investor, and they, let's say you talk to them and they kind of get the bug,
yes.
A lot of times they've placed their money somewhere else before you've had a chance to call them back and say, okay, I have one. Tell us just one of those stories where, uh-oh.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, that's kind of been one of the sad things. And this is like a two-year process, because we didn't make a lot of loans over the last 2 years compared to what we'd been doing historically. And a lot of investors that maybe I had told to just kind of hold on and we'll see what happens when we get busier, which actually for us started about September of this year, where we just got flooded with new loans. One in particular that I remember was a gentleman that probably had maybe about $500,000 invested in trustees with us at one time. And we just didn't have enough loans to accommodate that. So, unfortunately, in September, I called him back, and he had five loans outstanding with other companies. Four of them were on land, and one I know was a deal in Lancaster that wasn't paying, and none of his loans were paying. So, unfortunately, a lot of people have just put money in loans that just aren't working out.
The yield attracted them, but they didn't know enough to protect themselves.
I think it had been a little too easy with us over the years.
Yeah, and they don't understand the expertise necessary?
They just don't feel like there's a risk because they haven't perceived a risk with us for so long.
Right. Greg, you're using a pretty skilled group of contractors at this point. What are some of the secrets of keeping a good contractor interested in doing your work?
Probably just ease of being, you know, of working with me. I think that's probably the best thing that we have, and the fact that we're reasonable and we allow them to have a vacant house, that's, I'm sure, a big advantage right now. They're not having to deal with owners, and I just think that there's nothing that we do to stand in their way. They're able to get in there and efficiently get in and out. It's probably the most attractive thing for contractors right now. And we have work.
We have work. Is consistent work a big deal?
It's huge.
Okay, so the fact that they know as soon as they're done with this, there's another one to replace it.
Yes.
Prevents them from having to look all over the place.
Right.
Okay. What's a warning sign that you look for and say, okay, I don't think I want to do another job with these people?
Usually it's money issues. Usually it's them wanting draws before they're done with work.
Okay.
Yeah, that's usually my red flag now.
Before the work is, yeah, that's usually a very dangerous thing to do for contractors. How often do we typically pay in numbers? Let's say we have a job that's going to stretch out for 4 weeks. How often are we doing draws for that type of job?
It depends on the contractor. Most of the contractors that I'm working with now, probably once every 2 weeks.
Okay. So that's not a lot.
No, it's really not.
Okay. So we're not really dealing with a guy that's showing up every other day going,
I need money, yeah.
No, yeah. No. Is it a big help that we typically are buying the parts?
Yes, it is. The fact that the contractors don't have to front the money for our materials. We know what materials we want installed. We already have them, you know, pre-purchased almost with Home Depot. Home Depot delivers them all to the job site simultaneously, saves them a lot of time.
That's huge.
Negotiating with us as to what we want installed, and yeah, it's a major time saver, and it makes us just heads above probably most people.
Well, just the shopping for all those parts. You can go into Home Depot, and if they're out of 10% of the stuff, you're going to drive to another one and another one and another one, and that can take a lot of time.
Yes.
So that's a big deal.
Yeah, I kind of had some resistance when I first started it. The general contractors were a little irritated with me. They felt like I was crossing a boundary that shouldn't be crossed. They actually were they told me this, you know, in jest later on that it kind of irritated them, but they said once they got used to my system, they were pretty excited about being a part of it.
And that's because maybe they didn't have a secret markup on any of the parts. That's probably,
yeah.
I mean, if they're going to touch the part and pick it up, they probably have a right to a markup.
Sure, yeah, that's true, and I think the other part is just that they don't have to be out. They're able to take on much more work than they would normally be able to take on because they're not having to be out all of those costs of buying the materials. Yeah. There's only so many jobs you can take on when you have $50,000 of materials out. Most guys, that's a lot of money to have out in materials that you don't get to get back until it's all installed.
How's Home Depot been to deal with as far as the parts and deliveries and all that?
It was a little rough getting started.
Yeah, but you kind of now so you have a good system.
Yeah, now they're giving me full orders without back orders, and they finally understand what we need, and they're very cooperative.
Are you typically dealing with the same person on the other side of the phone most of the time?
Yeah, and it's usually email. Usually there's no phone calls.
No phone call.
Yeah.
I'm not used to that world. Okay. Craig, you talked to a lot of investors. Is the repair part of it, is that still a pretty big hurdle for them?
Yeah, for some of them. I think they get more acclimated to it. One tool that I've used to kind of give them an idea is a lot of times when investor will, I'll show him a deal that he might be able to put his money into, it is going to need some repairs. But fortunately, some of my clients have done before and after videos. So I just send those to the clients.
That's a great idea, by the way, isn't it?
It is. And just to follow up on that story, I had a client that had turned down a deal with one of my better clients who do just a fabulous job on the rehab. So I told her, I said, well, that's okay, I said, because I can understand what you're looking at. I said, what I'm going to do on this house, I'm going to send you pictures as they go along. And then when they're finished, I know they'll do a video. So about 3.5 weeks later, I had sent her many pictures and then the final video. And just last Friday, that same investor who turned down this client because maybe of the house took two of that client's projects. Mm-hmm. So they could really see the value that was being added to the house.
There's times in the loan business we hold money for repairs.
Yes.
What would be a typical situation where that would be the appropriate thing to do?
Typically, right now, we're holding repairs on just about everything.
Okay.
Because of the nature of the fact that you really want a major repaired house.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you want to make sure that the kitchen, the bathrooms, all are totally updated. So we're holding funds on just about every house.
Okay.
And it's the same thing with Greg mentioned on the contractors. I mean, that's a red flag if I'm dealing with somebody that maybe needs that money too quickly. I want to make sure that they can do it on their own before, refund them any money.
Okay. Greg, you now list every house our company buys and sells. How do you handle all the showing of those properties?
We don't show properties at all.
We don't show properties at all. This is going to be good. When you get a phone call from an interested buyer, what do you do with it?
Well, before what we were doing is politely letting them know that they needed to have a buyer's agent in order to be able to see our properties.
So you just told them to call another agent?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that simple. I would have a conversation with them. I would let them know. You know, I would ask them, what are you looking for? To see if I could meet their needs, because a lot of times the property that they were standing in front of may have not have been exactly what they wanted. It wasn't like I just blew them off. But I mean, we did have a conversation with them. I let them know that showing houses is not something that I do, because I want you to be pre-qualified with somebody. I want to know that you can get a loan. And that's not something that I ever want to be good at. I don't want to be sitting there with people going, okay, have they got their loan docs together, and have they actually proved that they can get a loan?
Yeah.
That's something that we really value as far as buyer's agents, that they take care of that for us and that they qualify people.
Do we typically hold any open houses?
No.
No. So the system you've created, basically, the MLS presents the product, and ultimately when we get it priced right, which is maybe a constant tweaking,
yes,
we end up with offers and we get into escrow.
Yes.
We have time for only one more question. How do we protect ourselves when that escrow is open? Do we do any checking to make sure the likelihood that this thing's going to close?
I usually do that before I get into escrow.
Yes to the offer.
Yeah, usually we're looking at their qualifications and whether or not they've really been pre-approved versus pre-qualified.
Okay. Craig, you see any signs of this slowing down?
Oh, no, not at all.
The other way.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a great time for investors to be involved in this market. Thank you both for your input today.
Thank you.
All right.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.